before we begin, I just wanted to direct you to a GoFundMe. Kratom activist Drew Turner, who's a veteran of the U.S. Navy, has been evicted from his home. He's also undergoing chemotherapy, and he's a disabled veteran. He's one of the best Kratom activists out there, and we really respect him a lot here at Kratom Science. We want to let you know that there will be a link to his GoFundMe page in the description, so help him out if you can. This is the Kratom Science Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Gallagher, blog and social media writer for KratomScience.com, your source for all things Kratom. Nick Clark was addicted to opiates and homeless by the age of 17. His father was a crack addict, and his girlfriend, now wife, shared his opiate addiction. Nick Clark's military career didn't end well, but he says he's earned a junkie badge of honor for dancing at a New Orleans strip club to earn money to buy drugs. After going AWOL from the National Guard and losing custody of his children, Nick detoxed and has been 3 years opiate-free with the help of Kratom. Even though he says he does a lot of Kratom, he seems to be leading a stable life after years of chaos. This is Nick Clark. This is his Kratom story.
I used to just smoke weed and drink like every normal American teenager. And then I started dating my girlfriend. She's now my wife. And her grandmother was actually involved in the original OxyContin lawsuit. And at the time that we started dating, my wife had already been taking Demerol. She had Demerol from her grandmother. And my wife's first words to me in high school were, "Hey, do you like pills?" And I was like, "Well, I want you to think I'm cool, so hell yeah, girl, I love pills, because I'm cool." And, you know, it was a flourishing relationship ever since. You know, I mean, my wife, she's been an addict since she was 16. She just didn't know it, you know. I mean, none of us knew that these little pills were going to do that.
And it says on your Twitter bio you were homeless at 17. What was that all about?
So the exact reason the moment I was homeless was because, like I said, my mom's wife is a cop. She found out I was in the shower. I was pretending to be in the shower. I had the shower running, but I was sitting by the door talking to my friend Wesley about some Loratab 5s that he had. And I was letting him know, like, "Yeah, I've got 10 bucks. I'll go ahead and pick up 10 or 2 from you tomorrow. All right, homie, later." And as soon as I hung up the phone, my mom's wife, Michelle, just busts in the door and starts, "Who the fuck are you getting fucking pills from?" And I was like, "I'm not getting any pills." And she was like, "You're a dirty fucking liar, blah, 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 blah." And they told me to go live with my dad. And my dad is a crackhead. That's where I get my drug problem from. Like, father-son bonding time. Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, whenever I was 14 was the first time I ever saw crack and helped make crack, because my dad's hands were shaking so bad that he was like, "Here, son, you hold it." And I helped my dad make crack whenever I was like 14. And that, I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, I mean, some kids play baseball with their dad, but I guess I'll stick with whatever the fuck I can get."
Shit.
So, I mean, I was set up for failure, really. So, I mean, at 17, I was kicked out of my mom's house. At this time I had already been sent to alternative school twice, once for weed, once for alcohol. If I'm buying Loratab in the house with a cop in it, eventually they have to be like, "Dude, we fucking tried, you know?"
Yeah.
So they told me to go stay with my dad. I got into a fist fight with my dad, and I was bouncing around from whatever friend's couch would have me. And then I moved in with my delightful wife, and she was pregnant 6 months later, and here I am.
Yeah. You have 3 kids, you said?
Yep. A 9-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 5-year-old. Whenever I went and enlisted in the Army, it's so twisted. I did my ASVAB, my vocational training, or my aptitude test, and they told me the jobs I qualified for, and one of them was medic. And I was like, "Well, what's that?" And they were like, "Well, you're the guy," you know, they broke down a medic for me, and at the end he was like, "And you're also the guy who has the painkillers, like the fentanyl suckers and stuff." And I was like, that, I want that.
I'm on that one.
Right. I was like, come on, bro. Like, I'll be in the desert with a locker full of fentanyl. I'm gravy. So that was the whole reason I chose to be a medic, not because I wanted to save lives. I was like, cool, that's the one that has dope. I'm down.
Yeah.
So whenever I went to go to MEPS, my recruiter showed up and was like, hey, we're going to go today. Are you ready? And I was like, well, 1 second. And I had an old dentist bottle for like 8 Loratab 7.5. And I had a half of one left in it. And that was going to be my excuse why I couldn't pass a drug test. And I was like, no, but I mean, it's a valid bottle. I mean, it's like 6 months old. So, I mean, hey, they can't say that I'm lying. And he was like, no, dude, like, you can't do that. So I waited 4 days until I could pass a drug test. And, you know, I drank a bunch of water, flooded my system. I was able to pass. But whenever I was on the plane to go to boot camp, I took my last 2 Loratabs, got to boot camp, found out that you could get Percocets through the dental place. So I went to the dental, had them pull my wisdom teeth, got Percocets, and then was trading people my MREs for any Percocets they had. So I was on Percocets the entire time I was in boot camp. And then I got to my medical school and found out you could get Adderall. So I told them that I couldn't focus for nothing and got Adderall and was taking Adderall and trading my Adderall for other people's Percocets and AIT. So if there was a will, there was a way, I was going to get it.
Yeah. I wonder if now that they know about the opioid crisis that maybe even within the military, they might have probably cracked down a little bit on how much anybody could get.
I doubt very seriously, because I know before I enlisted, the VA was one of the biggest pushers of painkillers. You could get Xanax, opiates, and antipsychotics for nothing.
Okay.
I mean, you tell them it just those three things. Now, if you need your blood pressure medication, you might have to, like, pass a test or something. But if you wanted Lortabs, like, half of my drug dealers before I enlisted were Vietnam veterans.
In New York City, there are 300,000 Vietnam-era veterans, and 40,000 of them are addicts. Most of them began using heroin, barbiturates, and amphetamines in Vietnam. And most of them came home with less than honorable drug-related discharges. These GIs are ineligible for veterans' educational, home loan, and employment benefits. They get no long-term VA medical or psychological treatment for their addiction. They're offered only methadone, a numbing drug with which some men can function and others can't.
And that's funny, because I knew a Gulf War vet who used to take these big orange horse pills, and he used to shave us off. And it was like the one week I took, because I've never been very tolerant of opioids, but the one week I took it, I was feeling good, I got high. And then the next week, he shaved me off a slightly bigger piece, and I got sick. And I was like, man, that stuff is strong. And he was taking them all the time. And he just got them through the VA.
Whenever I was 17, I was working at this pizza joint, and this girl was like, she was my weed dealer, and I asked her if she had any weed, and she was like, no, but I've got methadone. And I was like, cool, I've heard rap songs that mention methadone, I'll take one. And she never mentioned, hey, you see how this has a cross cut into it? You're supposed to break it and peep. Nope, none of that. So I just took the whole thing and was sick as horseshit for like 48 hours. It was awful. But yeah, big orange tablets, those were the old methadone. Now they're little white ones. Like, I was so strung out, I would go to New Orleans and strip at a gay bar there.
Oh, really?
I am not gay.
Yeah, but it was easy money.
My wife would come with me, and I would be wearing, like, her pink Converse and fucking stripping for men, and I would give her the money I was making periodically throughout the night, and she would go and cop for us and get dope. So I mean,
man, that's
like,
crazy.
I have my junkie badge of honor. Like, it was belligerent. And then after the Army had been giving me Adderall, me and my wife split up for a while, and I was like, oh, well, there's no point in me being a human being anymore. I'm just going to take as many drugs as I can find. And I started doing meth with my painkillers, and that was the end of reality for me, and I stopped reporting for my job in the Army, and they issued a warrant for my arrest. And that's the only time I've ever been arrested, was going AWOL.
Yeah.
If you see my mugshot, it's pathetic. I weigh like 112 pounds. My pupils are insane. I look like I'm psychotic.
Wow.
And like whenever the officer showed up to arrest me, they knocked on the door, and my mom's wife is a cop. So I mean, I looked out my window and I was like, yeah, those guys are cops. They weren't in uniform, and I was like, yeah, I'm fixing to get arrested. So I took my last Suboxone and snorted a lot of meth and opened the door, and they were like, hey, we're looking for Nick Clark. And I was like, yeah, that's me. And they were like, no, it's not. And I was like, no, that's me. And they look at the picture from my Army records where I'm a lot buffer and an actual person, and they were like, dude, that's not you. I was like, no, that's me. And they were like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? And then I was like, I don't know, man. So they arrested me. I went to jail.
That's for AWOL.
Yeah, for being AWOL. I had lost custody of my kids. I have three kids. My oldest one has cancer. Oh, with that, that's another story in itself. My son was diagnosed with cancer whenever he was 4. He's 9 now, and he's in remission, so he's perfectly normal, quote-unquote.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
My drug use immediately shot up. For me and my wife. I mean, we didn't know how to cope. We had zero coping skills because all we ever did, if we got mad, if we got sad, if we got upset, if we were happy, if we needed to celebrate, it was pills.
There's always a reason.
Right, exactly. Like, I can always think of a good excuse to get high. So my son is diagnosed with cancer. I had been in the National Guard for a year when that happened. So whenever my wife left me, my drug use got incredibly worse to the point where I couldn't function. At this whole time, my wife is using too, so the kids were court-ordered to go stay with my mom, and there was a whole, like, 9 months where I wasn't allowed to see them because we were still getting high and couldn't pass a drug test and yada yada. I had previously taken Kratom, but I only ever took it whenever I couldn't get pills. I had never given it a serious college effort to give it a chance. What? Hang on, buddy. I'm on the phone. Give me 1 second. Okay. Give me 1 second, pal. We'll talk about video games. Eventually, I tried to kill myself. I ended up in Memorial Behavioral Health Center. It's a mental ward here. I had to promise my wife I was going to stop taking pictures while I'm driving because I wrecked our van one time trying to take a picture of lightning. So I was like, no, I've got it. I was on the interstate, and I was like, I'm going to get it. Bam! And just totaled our car.
Were you high then, or were you sober?
Yeah, I was super fucking high then. I drove.
So you've been sober for a couple years now,
sober,
right?
Sober for 3 years, yeah.
Which Kratom I would consider you're being sober.
And that's what I've been trying to tell everyone. Like, my Narcotics Anonymous group tells me that I'm not sober because I take Kratom.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I mean, are you altering your mind? And I'm like, no, I'm altering my mood, but not my mind.
I mean, I've never been in a rehab program or anything, but I'm just seeing what some of it is just, they don't want you to do anything, like, including kratom. I mean, you can do coffee and sugar
and
powdered donuts
and
die of diabetes, but if you have kratom, you get kicked out of these places. And I think they have an interest in keeping that stuff illegal, because then people are court, if it was illegal, people would be court ordered for another substance into it, whether they're an addict or not.
Because my wife, whenever she got sober, she got sober a couple months before I did, and she got custody of the kids, and then she gave me another chance, and I had already finished rehab by then. I did a 1 month inpatient, so she was sober like months before I was. The rehab that I was in drug tested us and started drug testing us for kratom. Now, because yeah. I was inpatient, I couldn't get any kratom at the time, but yeah, they were drug testing us for kratom. My wife went into a halfway house, and like her last week there, they were like, oh, by the way, we're going to start drug testing for kratom. And she was like, oh, fuck this, I'm getting out.
So when did you first discover kratom?
Well, the first time I ever found out about kratom, I think I was like 21, but I mean, I was still in full-blown active addiction at the time, so
yeah.
I would use it as a means to avoid withdrawal. And that
okay.
was it. Like, I was not, I would call every single one of my drug dealers before I went to Herbal Alternatives to pick up kratom. And I was still hesitant, like, dude, somebody please.
Is that a shop down there?
Yeah, actually,
okay.
I moved next door to Herbal Alternatives a year ago, and I, no shit, worked there for free, because they saved my life. Like, the guy there, his name's Alex, he seriously saved my life. I would go in there whenever I first got out of rehab. I would go in there totally broke, and I would be like, dude, look, can I just clean up around the shop for some kratom? And he'd be like, yeah, dude, the broom's right there. And I would sweep, mop, Windex,
nice.
Whatever, and they would give me free kratom. And that's how I was able to get on my feet, was, you know, him helping me out like that. Now I'm working for a utility company. I have all of my kids back. My wife and I are together. We haven't done drugs in, I want to say, 3 years. To be honest, after the first
That's
year,
great.
I kind of quit counting.
Have you ever had any side effects from kratom at all?
No.
Yeah.
I took too much one time. To be honest, I take too much a lot. I mean, I'm just being honest. I eat a bunch of kratom. Like, I eat more than probably anyone I know.
Okay. How much a day do you think you do?
At least 2 ounces of powder a day.
Okay, that is a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I buy a kilo every other week.
Okay.
But I split it with my wife, so I eat like a quarter pound a week.
Yeah.
So that's a lot when I say it like that.
Yeah, it is a lot. It's,
I mean,
it's not going to get you into trouble like the other stuff is. I think a lot of the times what happens is when people are like, because we get comments on our website, and I keep up the negative comments there too, because I want, you know, people to have their opinion, but we get a lot of comments, oh, my wife was on this, and he lists all the characteristics that sound like an opiate addiction. And I'm like, your wife was lying to you, and she's still on the opiates. There's a lot of that, and a lot of the poison control center call things are, I'm doing illegal drugs, but can you tell me how to stop hallucinating, like, which kratom never in a million years would do. I mean, that's why I think all drugs should be decriminalized, because you should be able to be out in the open and say, this is what I'm doing, this is the problem, let's solve the problem if I have a problem, you know.
I was actually talking about Sweden today. I want to say it's Sweden, where they have the safe sites, where, like, instead of a methadone clinic, you can come in with your drugs, like your heroin or whatever, and they will provide you a little cubicle and a clean needle. You are in the presence of nurses and doctors, and you can ingest your drugs and be totally safe. No one's going to rob you. No one's going to kill you. If you overdose,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
medical staff right there. And guess what? Their crime has shot down by like 90%. There's no overdose deaths, and the AIDS thing isn't even a problem now.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, in Louisiana, we can't run a safe needle exchange program.
Definitely, and they're doing that in Portugal as well. It's like they go, they have nurses go around with buckets and give junkies clean needles, and the heroin problem has just like plummeted over the past 10 years since they decriminalized all drugs. It's kind of like once it gets out in the open and everybody's allowed to say, "Hey, hey, this is my problem. Don't arrest me," then it starts to be solved.
There's a TED Talk guy, and he talks about addiction. And how addiction isn't a drug problem. Addiction is a connection problem. Okay. Been on Joe Rogan a couple of times, but he was talking about the study where mice were offered cocaine water, or no, cocaine floor water, and they
heard the study.
Cocaine every time until they died. They put rats inside of a communal cage with toys and colorful shit and other mice. They never chose the cocaine. So they were saying it's not like a drug problem where cocaine will kill you because you'll take cocaine instead of eating. If you have a communal area where people can be connected, drugs don't really apply.
Nick is referring to Johan Hari.
And they've got both the water bottles, the normal water and the drugged water. But here's the fascinating thing. In Rat Park, they don't like the drugged water. They almost never use it. None of them ever use it compulsively. None of them ever overdose. You go from almost 100% overdose when they're isolated to 0% overdose when they have happy and connected lives.
Nick is from Gulfport, Mississippi, on the Gulf Coast. In Northeast Mississippi, a group of law enforcement officers known as the Lowndes County Crime and Addiction Task Force are spreading anti-kratom propaganda. They travel around and meet with neighboring town and county councils. They have succeeded in outlawing kratom in 10 counties and 23 towns. Their ultimate goal is to ban kratom statewide. In other words, police are trying to create conditions for a kratom black market in Mississippi and turn kratom consumers into criminals there. This is Eddie Hawkins of the Lowndes County Task Force. He was just elected sheriff of Lowndes County. He's one of the most prominent anti-kratom voices in Mississippi.
If anyone within Lowndes County is caught with kratom, they could face a misdemeanor charge with a $1,000 fine or 6 months in jail.
People are, that are addicted to other drugs are now supplementing their addiction and changing their drug of choice to kratom. And they're trading one addiction for another. We've done a lot of research in background on this drug. This drug has been banned in several states around us.
Oh, Mississippi is actually a big one for, there's a task force going around the state, especially Northeast, trying to make kratom illegal. And they're, you know, just pushing the propaganda and whatnot. But is, do you see any of that there?
Well, the funny thing is, months ago, like 6 or 7 months ago, possibly a year ago, my memory is spotty now, but our lieutenant governor was on Mississippi Public Broadcast Radio saying he was going to crack down on this kratom problem because kratom is just a new spice that's ruining people's lives. And he was like, what did he say? And you know the places you can buy it. You know those places that sell bongs and tobacco pipes, you know, places, that's the people who peddle this stuff to our kids. Well, they have to, on all, like, Lieutenant Governor and stuff on their website, they have to list all of their donors. And do you know who donated $12,000 to our Lieutenant Governor? The Mississippi Board of Pharmaceutical. And we were like, oh, get a load of that shit. The people who peddle methadone and Suboxone don't like kratom. Who the fuck would have thought?
Yeah, to me, that's so freaking obvious. I mean, it's like Scott Gottlieb just left the FDA and joined the board of Pfizer. Like, if it wasn't obvious enough, he did that, you know?
Right. I mean, it's literally just a revolving door. Lobbyists, policymakers. Lobbyists, policymakers. But actually, me and my wife went to go see the band Tool. I don't know if you know them, but
I saw them in the 90s.
We went to see them in Alabama. We were driving over there, and we had probably a half a kilo just sitting in the center console, and I have kratom stickers on the back of my car. I don't know if you've ever tried the Extract MIT-45.
I never had that one, no.
It's good as fuck. And, so I have like this big gold MIT sticker on the back and like a CBD magnet on my car. Like I'm wearing a shirt that says Enjoy Kratom, but it's spelled like the Coca-Cola thing, like Enjoy Coca-Cola.
Oh, that's cool.
And so we're driving through Alabama.
Where it's illegal.
Well, yeah, it's illegal there. So, like, we were sitting there driving through, and I'm Googling. We started talking about them trying to make it illegal in Mississippi, and I Google what states is it illegal in, and it's like, bam, number one, alphabetical order, Alabama. And I was like, get the fuck out. We've got a controlled substance in our fucking car. This is great. So, like, and it sucked, dude. Whenever we were going into the concert, we had to get paranoid like we were fucking drug addicts again and had to have my wife stuff it in her bra and stuff and hide our shit like it's fucking smack.
Which is ridiculous.
You go over an imaginary borderline from one state to another and they're like, oh, by the way, you're criminals now.
Probably how the law is going to be passed, it'll be 18 and over, 21 and over, but I'm like, really? It should be on the aisle near coffee and tea. Because I'm like, that's a, you know, it should be right there, like... Kids don't drink a lot of coffee and tea just naturally because it's not something that gets you high, but it's something that adults like to use to get through their work day or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, that's what Kratom should be. That's what I use it for. Like, when I'm really tired, I'll just have like a tablespoon, make it in a tea, get a boost. That's it. You know.
Literally, the worst thing that happens is I'll get nauseous or I'll get constipated. Ta-da!
Yeah.
But, well, the thing is it helps people get off of the pills that Purdue made $3.8 billion on in 2010. So they're like, hey, wait a minute. We can't have stuff that grows out of the ground that will compete with our product. Stop that. What people know about it is they're just misinformed. You know, they hear what the radio says and the TV says about this new drug, and they're like, oh, I don't like that thing.
Did you use it kind of as a transition thing to get off of heroin or opiates, or did you just completely quit and then you took Kratom later?
So, what I mean was, because it's the easiest way to sum it up, but I shot painkillers. I would shoot Dilaudid and Roxy's and stuff.
Okay.
I had only actually done like smack like three times, but. I use the needle to take opiates, so I call that heroin. But I'm trying to be really explicit because I want you to have the right thing, but it's the same thing. I mean, I shot opiates in my arm, heroin. No, I did a month inpatient at a rehab center, and whenever I got out, I started taking Kratom. But I mean,
okay,
If I didn't do 30 days forced detox, then I would still be using. I tried to do an outpatient rehab, and that was a joke. I would bang up in the bathroom and then come out and be like, hey, what's going on, guys? And they would be like, I think you're still using. And I'm like, that's offensive, man. it was awful, and they were like, okay, I think you need to do inpatient, and I was like, not cool, bruh. And they and then I had to do 30 days inpatient. The only thing is whenever you're trying to switch from actual like full-blown like taking 10 Lortab 10s a day or shooting up, like when you're trying to switch from that to Kratom, you have to get it out of your mind that you're going to get high, because if you don't go into it with, okay, I want to try to get sober, I want to try to just take Kratom, I'm not looking to fucking drool on myself and nod out, get that out of your mind and just understand you're not going to get that same high on Kratom, then you can do it. But if you're taking Kratom expecting that same heroin thing, then you're just going to go back to heroin. Whenever I was withdrawing, I mean, I would get full-blown restless leg syndrome until, like, it felt like my legs were going to vibrate off of my body. I was throwing up nonstop, like, and I would take Kratom expecting to get a buzz, and all it would do was take away my withdrawal symptoms, but that wasn't good enough. I wanted a buzz, so I would go right back to the needle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's cool that it takes away withdrawal symptoms.
I should have been fine with that. I should have felt blessed that I found a natural thing that I wouldn't go and fucking strip to buy. And instead, I was like, nope, I want a buzz. And I didn't accept that not withdrawing was good enough. And then after I did my withdrawals in rehab, got out and started taking Kratom, I was like, hey, this is all I need. And I just take Kratom.
That was the Kratom Science Podcast. Thanks to our guest, Nick Clark. Music is by Risey. The song is Memories of Thailand. Other audio clips used in this week's show are linked in the description. You'll find a link to Drew Turner's GoFundMe campaign in the description as well. Thanks very much for listening. Remember to follow the science. And take care.